Hi everyone. So I'm going to do some talk throughs for the psychological explanations of crime. So I'd recommend you following this along with your pack and the PowerPoint. I've put a PowerPoint onto the group teams. Please sort of allocate this to other people if they're not sure where to find things, because I've had a few messages about where resources are, and I know some people use Teams more than others. So if anyone's not sure, or if you have group chats, if you could signpost them towards these resources, that would be great. So we left off with Isaac's personality theory. So that's the first psychological explanation. We've covered that, or you've covered that independently. If you want, I can do a talk through of that as well. If you weren't there for the lesson or you think you'd benefit from that, just let me know. But I'm going to start from Kohlberg. So the cognitive explanations, there's two cognitive explanations. And just a reminder about the cognitive approach. So when we say cognition, what we mean is mental processes. So that can include a range of different processing and abilities, such as judgment, thinking. Obviously, thought processes is one that we've covered quite substantially in psychopathology and schizophrenia and things. It can also include morals. So Kohlberg's stages of moral development. This is the same Kohlberg that we looked at in gender. So he loves a good stage theory. So yes, it's the same psychologist. And this is a general psychological approach to morality. So those of you going on to study psychology further, you may look at the sort of psychology of morality. And so this can be considered in isolation of offending, but obviously it has application to explain criminal behavior. And as you'll see in some of the research, it has been used, or the research particularly around Heinz's dilemma has been used with offenders to assess their sort of levels of morality. And as I said, you can listen to this alongside the pack, but I'm going to actually start by talking about that research. So one of Kohlberg's best known experiments is the Heinz dilemma. I think you were asked to look at this in the prep. I will say, if you haven't completed the prep, that is a priority to complete all of the forensics prep and then maybe come back to listen to this to consolidate things. So yes, going back to Heinz's dilemma. So Kohlberg created a story that he would use to present to participants. So I guess this is a form of self-report in a way, because they're sort of giving their own report of how they would respond to that dilemma or what they think Heinz should do. So it's one of those self-report measures, but it's obviously using a scenario, and maybe you could think about the benefits or limitations still with that. So why using a scenario like this may be more advantageous than just your traditional statement questionnaire, but also still the issues that self-reports carry with them and the effect of that on validity. Anyway, Heinz's dilemma then, if I just sort of read it through. So Heinz's wife had a form of rare cancer and was dying. A doctor told Heinz that a local chemist had invented a new drug that might save his wife. Heinz was very happy to hear this and went to talk to the chemist. But when Heinz saw the price tag of the new drug, he was devastated because there was no way he could afford this drug. Heinz also knew that the price was 10 times of the cost of the drug, so the chemist was making a huge profit. Heinz tried his best to borrow money from his friends and family, but the money was still nowhere near enough. He went back to the chemist again and begged the chemist to lower the price. The chemist still refused to do that. Heinz knew that his wife would die without his new drug, so he broke into the chemist's office that night and stole it. So this dilemma was created by Kohlberg and has been used in various different studies with all age groups, from very young children to adults. And from the research then, he came up with these levels, these stages of morality. I will say, if you're asked about this in the exam or asked to do some form of assessment with this, I wouldn't suggest that you need to go into each stage in the level that it's presented, probably in the pack, as long as you can do maybe a sentence or two on each. And as I've said, the stage theory is a general theory of morality, and we are studying and explaining forensic psychology at the moment. So the key here is to link it to offending behaviour. So I would start off by explaining that there are three levels and the general gist of them. The sub stages I wouldn't bother with. Okay, so you don't need the stage 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sub stages. You do need to communicate then level 1 is pre-conventional, level 2 is conventional, and level 3 is post-conventional. And if you look at conventional as a term there used, we've got pre and post, then really it's all about that level 2, that understanding of social rules. And if therefore, if you're operating at level 1, you lack that understanding. If you're operating at level 3, you develop then your own perspective of that understanding. So that's the general gist of it. And I will just say now, and I think it's worth starting off your explanation by saying the links to offending from the outset. So the fact that most offenders have been found, or a significant amount of offenders have been found, to operate at the pre-conventional level. And the pre-conventional level being behaviour, being driven by, really it's that operant conditioning, that you will participate in a behaviour if you can avoid punishment, and you will not do something if you think that you will be punished. So you're just reasoning and operating on obedience and punishment. Also, as you progress through that stage, you begin to consider the cost benefit of rewards. So you're weighing up whether, will I get punished? Yes or no? Okay, even if there's a likelihood I will get punished, is it still worth it? Are the rewards that I may get sort of more beneficial than the potential risk of punishment? So Kohlberg used the moral dilemma technique and found that particularly young offenders and violent young offenders were significantly lower in their moral development. He did have a control group, so he compared this to similar aged individuals who didn't have a history of violent crime. And he also controlled for their social background to sort of aim to try to eliminate some of those variables, extraneous confounding participant variables, such as poverty and things. Okay, so just to clarify, I do a brief explanation of each level, pre, conventional and post, and emphasise the links then to crime, so that many offenders have been found to operate at the pre-conventional level. This is because their behaviour is categorised through needing to avoid punishment and gain rewards. Therefore, they're more likely to participate in crime because they think they just get away with it. Further up the levels then, once they are operating at a conventional morality, they are beginning to conform to the rules, the expectations of society and systems in place. So they're more likely to obey laws and those in authority. Level 3 then is post-conventional, and that's the deeper, higher level of morality where you apply your own moral and ethical principles. And I will say there is obviously some individuals who still participate in criminal behaviour who aren't at level 1. They may even be at the level 3 operation of morality. And this, for instance, we could explain through, say, acts of extremism, where the criminal act is motivated by their own moral beliefs of what's right or wrong from their culture. And therefore, this isn't explicitly sort of generalizable to all offenses. And that's something that you can discuss then in the AO3. So if we just, using the pack, look at page 15, the AO3 for this, it follows sort of that RIA acronym that I use for AO3 again. So research, where's the research evidence? And as I said, there's lots to be discussed here in terms of Heinz's dilemma. Issues then, again, issues with causation. Remember, the issue of causation can and does exist across the cognitive approach and the cognitive theories and explanations across your spec. So we can always talk about cause and effect. It's just, again, to emphasize making sure that you're being very specific with your explanation and elaboration in terms of why the cause of offending cannot be identified in Kohlberg's explanation. So you must be specific. There's another issue there of gender bias, which at this point I'm not really going to talk through. I know we need to go over gender bias from issues. But I think if you were to choose your three, I'd probably go with the supporting research, the issue with causation, and then the application point. But let's just quickly talk through those just to check your understanding. So the Goodjohnson and Sigerson, another study with juvenile offenders, 38% did not consider the consequences of what they were doing at all. 36% were confident they would not get caught. So you've got a good, well, over a third there of the offenders suggesting that they are operating at a pre-conventional level. So this supports that there is a relationship between a lower level of morality and likelihood to participate in crime. However, the issue of causation, and we can talk about this with the other cognitive explanation as well here, is that firstly, with any cognition, it's a mental process. So moral reasoning here, the same as memory, the same as thinking, the same as attention. We can't directly observe. So it's relying on inference again. And in terms of forensic psychology, when we look at cognitive explanations, when we look at the way offenders think, the way that they perceive, we do need to be careful with not assuming that what they're telling us and the way they're thinking is not a way of, in fact, coping with and justifying their behaviour after the event. So it's possible that these lower levels of moral reasoning are actually a consequence of them participating in certain offences, such as a justification for behaviour rather than the reason why they did it in the first place. There's discussion in your pack there on page 15. They give you an example saying that it may be that as people engage in more and more criminal activity, one way to deal with, I guess, and justify and deal with the level of guilt perhaps is to say it's only wrong if I get caught, and if I don't get caught, it's fine. So I think there's some validity in that. There's a lot to be said for this cause and effect issue, and the fact that, firstly, it is impossible to isolate cause and effect for cognitive explanations, and secondly, I think that it's plausible to say that a lot of these cognitions may be more of a product of offending than the initial reasoning behind it. As I said, it's up to you with the gender bias point. It is around androcentrism, so the idea that it's focusing on a male sort of perspective, and then it's trying to generalize to males and females. And there's research there by Gilligan that suggested that there is differences in the way males and females perceive morality and develop their morality. So the ability to generalize here is problematic. So that point's there if that resonates with you and want to use it. And lastly, practical applications. So this is, again, thinking about the cognitive approach. Generally, we've talked a lot about the usefulness of understanding the thoughts and mental processes of individuals, from individuals experiencing mental health problems and then being able to assess those and understand those cognitions either as symptoms or as causes of their symptoms through CBT and other methods. But if we know that things are being processed in a dysfunctional way or there's faulty processing, there is something we can do about that. So remember, the cognitive approach adopts soft determinism because it recognises there would be internal and external forces, but ultimately we can choose to respond to those. It's how we respond to what we're thinking that will dictate our behaviour or our emotion. So if we know that some adolescents, for instance, are operating at a lower level of morality, or we're able to identify that in some children, then we can obviously put interventions. And I would use the word intervention, maybe cross out treatment. So intervention programs in young offenders institutions, or even, I say, in school, may go far to reducing or even preventing crime. So, yeah, to keep that focus on the theory, so the moral reasoning, and the focus on offending, again, throughout your discussion. We should be able to see throughout the appeals that you're mentioning Kohlberg, you're mentioning morality, you're mentioning pre-conventional level one. So it's using that AO1 theory within the AO3. Okay, so hopefully that's helped. I think it's good sometimes just mix things up. If you're stuck at home, learning and listening can be beneficial, as we know, for our memory, etc. And if you're listening this today, I have put a message on Teams about our current situation with exams and things. And we'll obviously keep you informed as soon as we know anything. But just bear with us. I know Basvic's meeting today, and there's going to be more information given out to schools and colleges tomorrow from Ofqual. So you'll be the first to know as soon as we know and have steps in place. But as we've said, and advice from the principal is that for now, carry on as normal with your learning, as you are a full-time student. And that's, you know, that's what it's all about at the end of the day, is that you're learning from your A-levels. So do carry on with things. But if any questions do come up, don't hesitate to ask. I'll obviously try my best to point you in the right direction for information anyway. But like I say, you know as much as we do at this point. So yeah, you'll hear from me soon with some more of these to hopefully help your learning and revision. And yeah, again, look after yourselves and each other. And if there's anything I can do to support this quite difficult time, do let me know.